everyone. Welcome to Bad End Podcast. This is episode 78. I am Katie McCarthy of usgamer.net. I'm joined, as always, by Joshua Calixto of sites, I guess. I don't know. He doesn't really write for websites right now, but as far as I know.
Twitch.tv. Twitch.tv. /real_Joshua.
That's what's it, up, gamers? Yeah. Kyle's not here with us because he's moving. So he said his microphone is in a box that he cannot find. So poor Kyle is missing this week. But we are joined by not one guest, but two guests this week. We have Matt Kim of IGN. Matt, why don't you say hi?
Hi.
Introduce yourself.
Yeah. Hello. Thanks for having me on. It's been a while.
I know. It's been, I think, when we still work together since we last had you on this podcast.
I did one episode of Bad End while I was at US Gamer, and then you never had me on again. So I must have screwed never up. Again. I must have screwed up big time.
Yeah. Well, you went to IGN, and honestly, our friendship's never recovered.
It's never recovered. It's not. It wasn't the social distancing that killed our friendship. It was my inevitable betrayal.
Yeah, and yeah, June of last year, I think. It was like right around E3 when I heard. I think it was like I came back from E3, and then I heard you were leaving, and I was like, what? I was pissed. Anyway, also, we are joined by another guest. We had her on very, very recently, actually. Emma Kidwell is back for round two.
Hello, and I'm back. Yes, for more video game opinions, because I got them.
This is very exciting. Also, Emma, introduce yourself briefly.
Yeah, I'm Emma Kidwell. I am a contractor at Riot. Big emphasis on contractor. And I make games and write about them sometimes. The end. That's all you got to know.
Perfect intro, Emma. We have a lot of stuff that we want to talk about this week because Ghost of Tsushima came out. And there's been a lot of discussion around that. And I think we're going to have a lot to talk about. I personally am ready to like talk a lot about a lot of the conversations that's happened kind of parallel to this. And it's kind of been converging and a lot of stuff about video game criticism and representation, all that stuff. I do want to talk about that a little bit later, but I think we should start out talking about the game. I know it's hard to separate the two, but with this game, like, it's very much a video game. Like, above all else, it's a video game.
You know what I'm saying? It is the most game, maybe. It could be argued it is like the epitome of a game. Like, when you think of a big budget AAA open world game, you're thinking of everything that Ghost of Tsushima has in it. You're thinking of checklists. You're thinking of weird repetitive tasks. You're thinking of beautiful world. And this game's like actually beautiful compared to most other open world games, which I feel like are fine. But this game's like actually beautiful. It's a game for sure.
Gear, costumes, cosmetics, collecting.
Hell yeah.
Hats.
Can't forget about
haikus,
the lore.
That foxes. Is found in notes. Little creatures that you chase around that are basically like waypoints that are in disguise.
Day and night cycles.
Night
that
cycles.
Surprised weather. Me. Got it all.
It kind of does actually. This is I don't know. I don't know what I was expecting going in, but I kind of was hoping for more movie-ness out of it since they have like a Kurosawa mode and everything, but it's actually way more video gamey than anticipated.
Isn't it called Samurai Cinema or something, that mode?
That's
it's actually called Kurosawa
it's
mode.
Not black and white.
Is it?
Yeah.
They
the
got
black
the right.
and white one. Is okay. Kurosawa mode. Samurai Cinema is when you just have it with the Japanese language and English subtitles.
Okay. That's
but
what
still
I'm
in color.
Baby.
I had to stop, dude, because the voices are Japanese, but the mouths are still doing the English VO thing. So like it's totally off. And it's like the opposite of watching like a Bruce Lee movie. And then it just doesn't seem it. And then I hate reading subtitles while I'm playing the game that like I need to do to understand like what's going on. So I stopped, but
I haven't tried it yet because I really want to like put my language skills to the test and see like how good the translations are. I heard that it's pretty jarring.
Mm.
like the fact that the lip syncs or doesn't sync up with the audio, which I want to see for myself too, but I trust the gamers' opinions always.
I feel like the lip sync thing annoyed me at first, but then I feel like I kind of got over it or like got used to it maybe. Like now I'm like, because I tried playing in English and I was like, I just don't like this. Like it just feels wrong in a way.
Yeah.
So I switched to Japanese and I think the VO's good, I'm sure, but the Japanese just feels better. Like it just feels like it fits better. And I always play games with subtitles on because I'm just I'm always doing like two things at once. So I'm just used to having to read subtitles while I play games anyway. So.
And they got, oh, sorry, Josh. I just wanted to ask because Katie, there was a piece at US Gamer, right, a few weeks ago that y'all published that had to do with Asian voice actors actually playing the characters. Because Jin's voice actor, English and I'm assuming Japanese, is really good. The pronunciation is chef kiss fingers. It's very nice. But then it's weird because some other characters just don't have it down pat. Mm-hmm. So that's really jarring in and of itself too, but at least there's the effort. Gotta give an A for effort there.
Yeah. Casting. It does that thing where it's like, where in the English dub, they speak it with that accent, right? And you're, and that's always kind of been weird because it's like, I think this is a weird thing to bring up, but when I watch like PBS documentaries and they kind of do like famous actors do the voices of like old dead people and they're like, this guy was a Chinese immigrant who came in the gold rush, and it's like a white voice actor doing that accent, and you're kind of like, is this weird or is it just me? Because it feels weird, but like the actors in Ghost of Tsushima are all like, I think predominantly Asian American or Asian West North American Asians or something like that, so I don't really know where it falls.
Yeah, I had the same feeling too, but it's like like in Avatar, like the Last Airbender.
Yeah.
There's like a lot of characters that don't have any accents, but then like you have like Uncle Iroh who does. There's a lot of weird things with representation in this game that are difficult to suss out, but I want to get into a little bit later. Right now, I want to do a quick for the gamers listening to this podcast right now. All right. If you're a gamer and you're here and you just want to know, is the game fun or not? Am I going to enjoy it for my $60? I want to do a little thing here. Okay, at $60, is this game fun? Let's go, Katie, yes or no?
I'm having a really good time with it, but I'm also playing it like a podcast game. Like, I'm only, like, half paying attention to any of the story stuff, and I'm just kind of, like, exploring it Breath of the Wild style, just seeing, like, where the wind takes me, you know? Like, I'm just having a good time.
A yes.
Literally nice. Where the wind takes. Yes, yes. Sorry. I had to go more.
It's okay.
I can't ever just do
you,
one.
You
got to
give
answer.
The perspective. You got to give the graphics, audio, story. For me, it's a yes. Matt, what are you thinking?
Yeah, it's a fun game. I'm having a great time, actually.
Emma?
I'm going to give it a yes, but also the beginning is very slow.
Mm. Oh, it's so slow. It takes so long to open up. It's like, come on.
Bro, every time they go to flashback, I'm like, let me fucking slash. Yeah, right? Bro. Like, let me just chop stuff.
The transition from, like, especially in the beginning when Jin breaks his code for the first time. The transition to, like, the cutscenes, though, for flashbacks are really well done, I think.
That one took me by surprise in particular, like the first time you assassinate someone and then it's like your uncle being like, you never stab people in the back, bro, like you can't do that. That's against the code.
I like how it feels like the game kind of just gives you your full like attack set from the get-go. Like anything else that I earn going forward just kind of feels like extra.
Yeah, and I think the resolve system is interesting where the way it works is every time you get a couple sequential attacks or you parry some stuff, you get what's basically, if you think of the Souls series, an Estus flask type thing that refills every time you pull off a combo or you hit guys good.
Yeah.
And you can use those to heal in the middle of battle. But it's interesting because the enemies are pretty intense in that some of them will just straight two-shot you. Like, you just get stun-locked and just destroyed. So I wouldn't say, to me, the game doesn't feel, like, hard. But so I have died quite a few times in situations where I'm like, oh, okay, that killed me, I guess. Like, damn, I guess I have to do it different next time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like the progression in this game is really good. Like, it's... I feel like I'm constantly unlocking shit that's actually really useful, or like different stance moves or everything, and I feel like everything just feels good. Mm-hmm. Like, I have a problem with like some other games where like the upgrades and everything and the like costume perks and everything, they feel like negligible. They don't feel that impactful on like how I'm playing. Whereas I feel like Ghost, I'm constantly changing up my outfit depending on what I'm doing. I'm like, okay, I'm going to stealth in this fortress, so I'm going to wear my outfit.
That's good. Does an outfit
or
change the way that you can do stealth?
Yeah, there's an outfit that helps with that.
I'm doing stealth in like my full samurai armor, and I feel like it just like aesthetically looks funny, but I didn't realize it might actually be harming me in terms of like how to progress the mission.
You also need your stealth charms, your stealth move set.
I think I'm playing this game wrong.
Your stealth, you have been getting charms yet?
I have charms. I don't know. Like I said, so what I've been getting at was, I feel like as long as you know how to parry correctly and sneak up on people, you kind of can do a lot of the encounters regardless of like how hard they are, but maybe not.
That's
maybe
true.
I'm just like muscling my way through encounters that that should be more delicate.
I think I'm going to do a non-stealth build. Because I'm an honorable fighter, but also because it's more fun to do the combat instead of the stealth.
I'm with you, man. Like,
I'm trying to parry.
I don't think stealth feels good in that game. Like, I'm much...
Oh, no.
Right?
No. I like doing the bow stuff. Like, I just did this, like, outpost type area, which I thought was... It was like this fence had giant gaps in it. So I was just like standing at from behind the fence with my bow pointed in the middle of this gap, and I was just killing everyone, and no one could see me for some reason because of the fence. And it was so funny because it was just like, this is so dumb. How do they not see me through this giant hole in the fence?
I think coming off of playing The Last of Us especially, and I don't know if it's like... because of Naughty Dog studio culture and the expectation that certain players have based on their titles. But like coming off of that game and the stealth there and the AI there, and then jumping straight to Tsushima was really jarring because the last little side story that I did, all the Mongols just had their backs to me the entire time. So I was just able to go up and assassinate them. And in, like, I could have done a standoff, which like that's really fun to do and interesting, but like, I don't know, what's the point if I can just go up and shank everyone in the neck and no one like makes a noise or like is alerted to my presence? It's the stealth is just very like video gamey.
Yeah.
And it's not like necessarily bad because I'm terrible at the combat, so I'll take it, but it's just, it's not like the best, but I didn't expect to like stealth into every encounter anyway.
Yeah. I do want to talk about the environments, because that to me is what is, it has me wanting to come back to the game. Like, just this is something that I feel like, I don't want to say it's underrated, because it's clearly not underrated, world building and the environments of these games. Like GTA 5, I'm not necessarily playing a GTA game for like the story, but I like driving through this virtual LA or what have you. And I think Ghost of Tsushima is doing a similar thing to me, where I'm like, I like seeing this space and just exploring it. And there's just some really beautiful, the grass, beautiful. They figured out grass on the PS4.
Yeah.
Like, they did it.
It looks great. It's like, always beautiful. Just how it glistens. Oh man. It just moves great. It's great grass.
And you just want to be there. You get to like go into some hot springs, do some onsen action.
Mm-hmm. Look at Jin's naked butt.
Good butt.
A little bit.
There should be more butt. Like, I was thinking about it. I was like, where are all the like dude butts in games? Yes. There's none. There's
dude
so many women
games.
Ass. Mm-hmm, no dude ass. There needs to be more.
Gotta balance it out.
Also, it's just like so he's just like going in there. It's, I respect it. It's
a powerful move.
Good video game dude ass.
You have to.
Batman Arkham Asylum. You're just looking at his butt the whole time, dude.
That's true. That camera is so fucking low.
Oh, it's the same thing though. Like the FOV in Ghost is a nightmare.
Oh yeah, it's not like unplayable, but man, it's not the greatest thing to have to grapple with when I'm playing. It's just, it's so weird. I'm trying to think of another game I've played recently that has had a weird camera FOV, but like I don't think I can think of anything. It's just, it's,
you know, so what's strange. Crazy is I started that game not noticing it. And then I took like a day off. And then when I jumped back in, suddenly it's all I could notice. And like to the point where I slacked like my coworkers. I'm like, hey, is there an FOV slider? Did I mess something up? Because suddenly I can't play this game anymore.
I also feel like a lot of the video gamey stuff feels kind of shoehorned in. Like they were just like, we need to fill this place up with shit to do or else the gamers are going to go crazy. Mm-hmm. So... sure. There's a lot of like hidden stuff that ties in with like upgrade systems and stuff. There's so many like little health upgrades in the game that are like, it's not, you go into the hot springs just to A, think about one of two things where it's like, think
your
about
uncle.
Your, do you want to think about your uncle or your dad? And then you think about one of them and then your health goes up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then there's like other things that upgrade your health too, but then you can go to like shrines and then like honor the shrine, or you can like do haikus where you just like make a haiku and just like look at stuff and it makes a haiku, like fridge poetry haiku shit. That it's all stuff great. Where it's like they just went to other video games that have these same types of upgrade systems and just tacked on some Japanese looking stuff over it, you know, like what's haikus, shrines, fucking onsen, bro. I feel like their team was just they were just brainstorming like that. They're like
they had like a dartboard, like a dartboard. Yeah.
Yep, the bunch of Japanese stuff on it and just like throwing shit till something stuck. It's really nice though. I mean, like they put, if anything, they put a lot of detail into the environment, especially like the very beginning of the game when you're training with your uncle, the maple tree, I'm pretty sure is what that was. Just like, that's a beautiful shot. And like, again, the grass is really pretty and like, it's a very beautiful game. Like that photo mode is going to be used relentlessly by me. Cause like I've paused the game more to take pictures than I have, I think, actually playing the game. Like everything's really pretty, but the faces aren't.
Yeah.
I feel like there's something a little off about the character animations. Like with Yuna, I just kept looking at her face too much. like Jin obviously looks better than most character models because he's like the main character model. And so does the uncle because he's going to be in a lot of screen, a lot of like, oh, what's the cut word? Scenes. Yes. Thank you. I kept trying to think like screenshot, but that's not it. But like, so they look beautiful and great, but then everyone else just kind of looks like you got that like NPC treatment, which Oblivion is fine.
Face.
It just looks a little too, it just looks a little too plasticky, I guess. It's my biggest complaint so far in terms of visuals.
Like a weird glossiness.
Yeah.
Also, so there's so many repeat NPCs. Like if you rescue a peasant on the road, it's always going to be like one of like three character models, like same clothes and everything. I'm like, you couldn't have switched this up like a little bit. So that's like definitely so, especially now that the more I play and the more I just explore, the more I'm noticing it.
Mm-hmm.
I like that the main characters who do have like real faces, they look like real people's faces. You know, it's not like some A-list actor who they just like imported into the game. Unbearably attractive, like it's just, it's like normal people, which I dig. It feels like real people to me, which I don't get that much out of video games. And maybe we could start broaching some other stuff here, but I feel like Sucker Punch, for as much as they might like not be 100% on base, I feel like it doesn't feel too distasteful up until this point that I've played. I don't know how you guys feel about that.
I feel like, Matt, you've played the most, so like, how would you say
this
is going?
I don't think, like, I just think that they, like, it obviously loves samurai movies, and that's like its primary influence, and in that regard, I think it succeeds pretty well, pretty good, right? Like, it's a, you know, as you said, it's a fun game. A lot of the mechanics are tied to these, like, Japanese elements in a way that's just like, it's fun and it's cool and it's like neat and exploring wise. And like, my issues with the game aren't textual, right? Like, my issues with the game can't be read from the game, right? It's in that kind of weird way. And so I actually have no problems with anything that I've encountered in Ghost of Tsushima as far as like what I've played, you know. It's like really just me bringing in my own experiences into the game, and that's where like stuff gets like weird and like mismatched with what I'm playing versus how I'm feeling. But from what I've played, it's just a fun arcadey style. Like before I played Ghost of Tsushima, I used to think that the people who were like, man, I miss old Assassin's Creed, I thought they were crazy. But now I'm like, actually, you guys have something there. This is way more fun than like The Witcher or anything like that.
Fun. Mm-hmm. Fun.
I think it's a fun game.
Let's go into some of the other things that you're talking about. Some of the issues that you're feeling in the non-textual realm.
Yeah. So I knew going in that I would have some issues related to that just from how I, you know, it's the same thing when I watch like samurai movies and most kind of like Western versions of Asia stuff, right? Especially kind of when it pertains to Japan in particular, only because like the Western lens of Japan is weird. And I think Emma might agree with me on this one. Yeah.
Hell yeah, it is.
Right? And so like I was iffy going in, and without getting too into it, like Japanese imperialism makes me wigged out, right? It's like it makes me uncomfortable. And so like the first opening moments are like, we have to defend our land from these like foreign savages, and like we have to protect our honor, or, you know, our people, our nation, right? And then only through these traits that are to us like invaluable can we protect the sanctity of this land. And I'm like, yeah, this is it. I knew this was going to happen. It's already happening 5 minutes in. And then the title screen happened and it's breathtaking and gorgeous. And I'm like, okay, let's play some more.
Yeah. And I want to preface the rest of this conversation by saying we have three Asian American folks on this podcast right now, which is like, hey,
awesome.
That's got to be a record. Or something,
we just set a world record. Call Guinness.
Mm-hmm. The dream.
Most diverse podcast.
I agree with you, Matt, like 100%. But I want to, let's like back up a second, talk about some of the context of this conversation, because this was a thing on Twitter. Emma actually had a tweet that kind of blew up,
yeah,
and she got some backlash on it. And I want to say that this is a pretty complex conversation. I feel like, especially when we talk about representation, stereotypes, a lot of the things that we're talking about, like with the perspectives that we have on video games, it's always going to be complex. But I feel like, especially when we start getting into some of this like kind of Asian American territory and like Asian, like back in the motherland type stuff, where it gets into a very gray area that it's hard to speak super authoritatively on. But I want to try to engage with this in good faith. And I because I feel like a lot of conversation gets super boiled down on Twitter, whereas I think this is complicated.
Yeah.
I think like some people say stuff that sounds really reductive, but like there's a good point in there somewhere. I think there's a lot of stuff that's said where you kind of just want to like baseline dismiss it, or that sounds really sketchy. But if we kind of take some time to pick it apart, there's some good conversation to be had. So I don't know, maybe Emma, you want to talk a bit about the conversation and where that started and where kind of what you had to say about it on Twitter and what the response was to that. And we could start like delving into that a little bit more.
Yeah. So I want to preface this by saying that I know a lot of traditional gamers don't play games, quote unquote, like inspired by history to learn about the country or the culture that the game is taking place in, because that isn't entirely realistic or fair. So I can understand to a degree the argument of like, well, you know, this game isn't historically accurate, it's all fantasy, like who cares? I get that to a degree. You're right, because everything is like video games are fiction, but they're based on true life, whether you like it or not. And to that end, I from what I understand and from what I've tried looking into, Sucker Punch is a studio in Seattle, correct? And I don't think the writers or the narrative team or anybody who had a hand in shaping the narrative of the game or did research for the game was Asian or of any sort of Asian descent, Japanese specifically. And I have this weird relationship with that where I think one of the responses to the tweet that I put out was like asking, you know, for game critics, game outlets to give, you know, Japanese writers or Japanese American writers like the chance to critically look at Ghosts of Tsushima instead of a white guy that likes samurai films, because there's a giant difference there. And I want to like recognize that there is value in white folks learning the history and culture of my heritage, because like that's a really big deal and it shows that you have respect for where I come from or where my mom comes from, but it's all the same. But there's always going to be some sort of experience or this intrinsic missing piece that a white guy who has like a history degree and like lived in Japan or like experience, like did all, like checked off all the boxes to be a quote unquote expert, they're just never going to have what I have or what other Japanese Americans have, especially like the children of immigrants specifically, because I feel like that's an entirely different conversation where we feel very alienated from both cultures. So it's like, what can I speak to? But it's just weird trying to think about it critically, because I know that these developers and these writers didn't like storm in here and go, we about to disrespect some people for the hell of it. Because you're making a game and you want to entertain. It's a complicated thing, because I know for a fact that you're taking a historical event and you're not explicitly saying that it's a fantastical view of this real thing that happened. Tsushima itself in the game isn't entirely historically accurate either, from what I've read, which isn't like a huge deal, but I don't know. There's just, it's little things like that that just kind of like boil down to something deeper. And I like, it's not that hard. It really isn't, like, especially from the outside, to find like at least a consultant. I hope they had consultants. Like, I'm sure Sony Japan had to have had some hand in it. I don't want to take up too much by just rambling, but like, you need to have people of color. If this is a game about Japanese people and Japanese history made by a Western studio, so you have a Western lens no matter what, you have to put in the work and have at least consultants or writers or historical like fact checkers or something. Westerners' view of Japan is always going to be fetishized or like glorified in some way. And I don't think that Tsushima is doing that, but it's definitely putting a weird view like on samurai, because like they weren't really all that great, or like they weren't like the be all end all of Japanese society as they're playing it out to be. If going like if my knowledge of Japanese history has anything to say about it. But before I end my long-winded rant, there's a really good Japanese games critic. Their name is Kazuma, who has been documenting their thoughts on the historical content of Ghosts of Tsushima like very well. So I encourage you to seek him out, because he's been doing a fantastic job and can speak to this way better than I ever could. But I don't know, man, just have like Asian people, like especially Asian people who have been like colonized and by Japan, because I feel like that's an even weirder relationship too. I don't know. Culture's weird. This is a weird space. And I know no one means any disrespect, but you like have to hear us out.
So I feel like the conversation has so many different tendrils, and I would like to kind of go through them kind of one by one. A lot of what was being said at first was, hey, it's good for us to have multiple perspectives on this game. Can we get some Asian Americans and some Japanese Americans to speak about Ghost of Tsushima? The thing is, it's not like you have, they're going out and like picking people out of nowhere. It's like these people already exist. There's Japanese games critics out there. Like Emma's here right now. We've got like David Shimomura's like half Japanese and stuff like that. And it's not like these people don't exist. It's not like you're doing some kind of weird thing to like artificially grab these people out of nowhere. It's like they're there. They have stuff to say about this game. It can be valuable. And I don't see what the issue with that is. Like if I was looking to buy a house in Seattle, I would go to multiple people. I would go to a realtor over there. Except then I might want a second opinion of someone who just lives in Seattle to be like, hey, how is this area? Like, you've lived there for 10 years. What do you think? And I don't think it's offensive to be like, hey, someone else might have a valuable perspective to add to this conversation. And Ghost of Tsushima is a game made by a Western studio that portrays Japan. So I don't see what's so weird or offensive to say, hey, maybe a Japanese American could provide some valuable insight about this game. Nobody was saying like, nobody white should review this game. Like that was never what the ask was. It was just like, hey, maybe like having one or two, you know, Asian folks talk about this game would be one thing. And then the conversation took a weird turn, which I think is one of those turns that I don't think is born in bad faith. For some people, I think it was, but I think there was a point there, which was, well, what do Japanese people think about the game? Because it's portraying their country. And so I have a lot of thoughts about this too, which is, okay, first of all, there are Japanese reviews out there. They fucked with the game. They liked it. I think like Famitsu liked the game. They thought it was really good. That's great. I'm glad that those perspectives exist. I would never be like, we shouldn't have this perspective. Like, I think it's just good that this exists. I think it's great that Japanese people weighed in on this game. And there's like another weird layer to this, which is, I always think of Kung Fu Panda, which is a movie that came out. It's made in the West that was received really well by people in China because it like was a different perspective on their culture that they thought rang true. At least for a lot of viewers in China, they really liked how it portrayed their culture, and it tapped into something that maybe they weren't able to really see themselves because it was like from a third party that was like observing through a different lens, which I think only adds to the point that different perspectives on different things are good. But it's this whole like, if Chinese people like it, then why should we care about what Chinese Americans have to say about this whole thing? Because like your fucking country likes it and you're just being a little bitch is what people end up saying, right? But first of all, okay.
It's complicated.
Just because there were Japanese people that liked Ghost of Tsushima doesn't mean that like every person in Japan who played the game would have that same opinion. First of all, like there are definitely people in Japan who would probably have a much different perspective on it than like Famitsu would. First of all, second of all this shit hits way different when you're Asian American. And we touched on this a little bit early in the podcast. And I think part of it is that like we grew up with culture and stuff that we got like made fun of for like in high school and middle school and shit. So now you have all the kids who were making fun of you for being Asian in high school, and they're like the only ones who are fucking writing reviews about it. And when you say, hey, can I write a review about this thing? And they're like, bro, you trying to affirmative action this? So, and then people get weird when you say like that multiple Asian Americans might have something valuable to say about this, right? Like, I'm Filipino, Matt's Korean, Emma's Japanese, but this is like where intersectionality comes in, where it's like often the blanket stereotypes we're talking about get applied to like all of us in the same mm-hmm. way, in a really fucked up yeah. way. Like, I got called a chink in middle school, like straight up. Mm-hmm. I'm Filipino, Jesus. Dude. Like, what? It just depends, like, on how people see you. So maybe we don't share the same history of like where our parents came from, but a lot of us do share the same history of like who called us fucked up shit back in the day. Mm-hmm. And we all, like, that stuff all weighs into how we see a video game about Asia made in the West. So to kind of wrap the stuff up that I've been kind of synthesizing here, not bad for white people to talk about Ghost of Tsushima. In lots of cases, they have stuff to add. Nobody is saying that white people can't talk about this game. On the same token, I think it's valuable for Japanese people to talk about this game. On another token, I think Asian American people have other valuable insight to add to this game as well. We might benefit from having like a good amount of those people in the conversation represented, because the circumstances under which the game is made just happen to align with that kind of identity. So all of these things kind of come together in this big mishmash of things that are basically saying like, hey, let us say some shit. We're here. Why is it so bad for us to talk about this thing too? And I think a lot of people would agree with this stuff overall. And what really disturbs me is like the subset of people who, I feel like the reading of some people who say like, hey, let Asian Americans talk about this game, is this weird reflex of like thinking that we're trying to like affirmative action ourselves into like talking about these games. Do you feel like that's how some of this stuff is taken? Like, I feel like sometimes the people who are like vehemently opposed, I can't imagine any other logic besides like, oh, you're just trying to leverage your identity to get mm-hmm. you to land you a piece so that you can make the $20 on having a byline, you know. That's really what I think. That's really what some people think this is. Mm-hmm. And that just feels straight up racist to me, because it's like, A, we're already here.
We have
valuable stuff to say. And C, like, it's not, I'm not like hurting someone else to have my opinion heard on this thing. You know what I'm saying?
What I think has been really interesting from either Asian Americans or Japanese Americans, or full on just like Japanese critics talking about this on Twitter, is that white folks will come in and like try to discredit their opinion or say that they aren't like Japanese. Just straight up coming into someone's mentions and being like, you know, no, you're wrong. And here's why. Yeah. And it's like, oh, mm-hmm. okay. I've never seen that before. Mm-hmm. If I'm looking at it from the white man's view, I understand like feeling a little threatened. Mm-hmm. Like, well, because again, as Josh said, we're not saying like no white man is ever allowed to talk about this game, because, you know, all opinions are valuable. So like, I understand feeling threatened by that, because, you know, you take things and you like intrinsically, you look at it and make it about yourself. Like, because we're, you know, just makes sense. That's how it's processed in your brain. And a lot of people don't like to recognize that there's this little thing called privilege that plays into all of our lives. So like this space in particular, you have a white men are statistically or more likely to be in a position to write critically about these games. And then you have, you know, the rest of us who have to advocate a lot harder, and we're still seen as like a threat to that for some reason. I don't like that people feel threatened by it, because you shouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, going back to what you both said, I think one of the things about the, here's what Japanese critics thought about Ghost of Tsushima, and that's fine and well. I don't think any of us here will say, oh, Japanese people should, or we shouldn't listen to what they're saying. I think the problem comes is when their opinions gets used to shut us up, right? Is when, oh, well, the real Asians said this and they're okay with this, so your opinions are no longer are valid, right? And that's where the problem comes in, is and that's the whole, like, that layer of Asian American identity, right? And it's in such a weird ride to have Asian Americans as a group, as a group with opinions and criticisms to come out and finally be heard, but at the same time we try to introduce sort of nuances, like, well, we're not a monolith and we all have different opinions about this and they're all valid and they all should be listened to. But then that's when the white people are like, I don't want to think about this and or that, so shut up, right? Japan says it's fine, so you guys don't have voices anymore, and then none of this nuanced shit that I'm hearing about, you know?
It's weird because, like, my understanding of Japanese culture now is coming from a woman who hasn't lived there in, like, who hasn't lived there in over 40 years. Like, my mom came here in the, I want to say the 80s. So her view of, like, Japanese politics and culture kind of comes from, like, a visitor's lens now, because she, before, you know, current events, she, like, went to Japan once or twice a week because of her job. So, like, I'm still able to understand what the current climate of Japan is like, but there's a very weird, prideful, I don't know how to broach this without sounding weird.
Let's walk through it. We have space here, you know?
Yeah, I think it's
hard to talk about. Like, a lot of this stuff is difficult.
It is. Literally hard to talk about. Yeah. I'm having a hard time myself.
Because I know that young people in Japan view, because Japanese politics are shit. Yeah. Shit. So a lot of younger Japanese people are becoming radicalized. The pride that their parents feel for their country is very different than how I guess young people feel about their country right now. Anyways, like, my parents love America and think it's the greatest country in the world and will defend our flag to the death. And that's Japanese nationalism as well, but to, like, a whole nother degree when I tell you how, like, respect and tradition especially is, like, big over there. My view of Japan and, like, how Japanese people my age think about things critically, like, think about their own country, is just gone. I don't know how they feel or how they think unless I, like, go to Japanese websites, use Google Translate to kind of try and piece it together, which is why I've really liked Twitter for all these conversations, because there are people in Japan who talk about it, but they translate it themselves, so I can trust that source. But it's weird coming in with a perspective that isn't A, entirely my own, and B, like, outdated. Yeah. So you kind of, like, second guess yourself, where it's like, well, okay, you know, they might be right. Maybe I shouldn't even broach this subject.
I mean, it's like if, like, some Japanese publication had been like, here's what Americans think about, you know, Metal Gear Solid 2, and they took, like, the top 4 Metacritic scores and were like, this is what the US thinks about it. They all love the representation of America in Metal Gear Solid 2. You know, like, it sounds ridiculous to put it that way, but you have to leave room for the fact that people have different opinions within a country. And I feel like there wasn't that much space given to that idea in the whole, like, the Japanese person that agrees with me is right conversation, which I think a lot of it ended up sort of being to an extent. Mm-hmm. And there's another weird layer to this whole thing, which is that the game is Ghost of Tsushima, right? Where it's like, I'm like playing the Ghost of Tsushima and going like, fuck, this shit is like, they really screw the pooch on this one. Like, they have no respect, just absolute caricature. It's totally ridiculous. Yeah. Like, it's not like GTA levels again of, like, just being assholes about stuff. Mm-hmm. So it makes it more complex, because it would be disingenuous of me. It would be disingenuous of, like, other people as well, probably in some ways. I'm sure people will take offense to different parts of this game that might not come off that way to me at first, but it's not the type of game where I'm sitting there going like, everything about this shit is wrong, and therefore, like, it's almost like as if you have to legitimize your own perspective as being valuable Even though like it kind of inherently is, because you have stuff to say about this that maybe someone else might not have to say about mm-hmm. it. And it's only made more difficult by the fact that this game isn't super egregious in the ways that it steps over. But I think the fact that a lot of this stuff is nuanced is what makes it more important to have people who are more like tapped into this stuff and who have had people, you know, step over the line in some ways differently over the courses of their lives and have been shaped by this stuff and have seen these misrepresentations in media over the last 20 years, etc. And on top of that, I think Ghost of Tsushima also does this thing where it really plays on like the whole playing into like the Kurosawa / like samurai film thing of like, if they overplay the honor thing, it's because that's how they did it in the movies, bro. We're just copying the movies. We're not saying this is how Japan is. It's, of course, it's a fantasy version of Japan, blah, blah, mm-hmm. blah. Yeah. But they're like cribbing off of a media, like Japanese media as well. So that's another way of kind of like skirting around some of the responsibility that they have in some of this, which is also very video gamey. But again, I'm not going to say like these guys are a bunch of assholes. They did everything wrong. I think in general, this game is pretty cool. Like, I think there's good stuff going on here and I'm enjoying it and I'm not like super offended. I'm not going to act like I am. But at the same time, I'm also not going to act like Emma's perspective isn't valuable. I'm not going to act like Matt's perspective isn't valuable. I'm not going to act like there's no value to another perspective, you know?
Also, like, I feel like it's worth mentioning that Sucker Punch, their last game was Infamous Second Son, which was a pretty offensive game. Like, it cast Troy Baker as an indigenous person. Like, I think the brother character is also just a white guy that mo-capped and voice acted it. And it's just, I think there's a lot of the distrust in Sucker Punch ahead of Ghost of Tsushima was stemmed from that, is like they really messed up big time and made like a pretty offensive portrayal. And I feel like they learned from their mistakes in some respects. Like, they cast authentically, like there's like Japanese Americans and Japanese people in the voice cast, and like the voice actor for the villain is also like a Chinese American. I think they're Chinese American. So it's like they did way better with casting this time, which is great. It seems like they actually heard the criticism. They may have not like publicly acknowledged it probably, but they were definitely like, wow, it seems like they heard what everyone was talking about when that game released, which to me is like, okay, like that's a good thing, because it shows that criticism works. Like, be loud about things that aren't right in these games, because the developers are listening, whether they like make like a big like press release about it or not. And hopefully they take it to heart and they don't get like very defensive about it, like what happened with the Horizon Zero Dawn situation, where they just double down on it. So in that respect, it's I was like glad to see that they cast well for this one. And I mean, yeah, obviously there's criticisms that other people have that are way valid, obviously, and there's definitely a very we love samurai films and that's all we're doing here like type of vibe with this game. Like, there's a character that's a strip, just Lady Snowblood, but she's old. That's pretty much like there's a lot of like very obvious influence in this game, but I felt like that is definitely where a lot of the distrust from critics kind of started with this game, is like they don't have a good track record. And I don't know, like, I love the Sly Cooper games, but those games are also like, I don't know, maybe a bit weird in their portrayals from time to time.
Honestly, I think like Josh is right, there's nothing like outright offensive as far as I can tell in however far I am in Ghost of Tsushima, but I think it's an exciting game to talk about, because we're all bringing in, Emma, Josh and I are all bringing in different perspectives into this sort of Western take on Japanese culture, which itself, it works as a wonderful metaphor for Asian Americans, you know, like the Western eye on Asia is sort of like, as Asian Americans, we grew up in this not quite there, not quite here kind of mentality. So in a way, a Western lens on a Japanese society kind of game sort of fits with our upbringing. And the fact that we have this sort of discomfort of trying to like really follow this thread on like our feelings about it really just I've unpacked a lot about like game criticism just through Ghost of Tsushima, even though it's on the surface it's just a fun arcadey Assassin's Creed modern kind of action adventure game, but like pulling the thread on like how I feel about this has been like really interesting for me, and there's a lot of sort of meta criticism to be had here, you know, like what am I bringing into Ghost of Tsushima that that's different from an average like regular customer who's just buying a new $60 fun game to play over the summer, right? What does it say that a studio that has a track record of sort of misrepresenting cultures in the past goes maybe the extra length to portray Japan in a better way, you know, in an industry that has famously fetishized Japan for so long, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a lot of interesting things, and I haven't fully, you know, gone through all the threads yet myself, but I think that even though this game might not be like a Metal Gear Solid 2 with all these like philosophical underpinnings, there's something to be explored here in terms of our cultural identity, our upbringing, and stuff like that.
And I think there's like a few things that you have to accept before you can really participate in that conversation. And one of them is that, and I think we forget this, is that you don't have to be the authority on everything to say how it resonates with you as a person of a particular identity. I think we should be more okay with saying, hey, I'm American born, half Mexican, half Filipino reviewer who's looking at this game, and here's what I think about it, and here's my perspective on it. I don't have to be 100% right. I'm going to tell you how I feel about this game, what I'm bringing into it with my unique perspective, and that's what I have to say about this game. And that in itself should be valuable because it is different than, you know, what Matt might think or what Emma might think or what Katie might think for that matter. I think all of that stuff is valuable in and of itself, and it doesn't have to be this qualitative, my view is better than yours. However, I think what it just pertains a little bit more to Ghost of Tsushima because of the circumstances under which it was made, and that's why this whole conversation started. But I think the other level that this is happening on is that you kind of have to care about like the context of a game to have this conversation too, right? Which is like a lot of people would be okay with the gamer review that we gave at the beginning of this podcast of like, is it fun to play? Is it worth $60? Yes or no. A lot of people just come to video game criticism for that, and they think that that's what video game reviews are, where it's like a product thing, where it's just like, are you gonna have fun playing the game? Yes or no. Some people might be like one step higher than that, where it's like, is this a game egregiously offensive toward people of color? Yes or no. And they care about that too. And then there's other layers of like how much you care about the context of a game, how it comes off to different people. And I think a lot of gamers just kind of don't necessarily care about that stuff when they play a game. Like, I don't know how much like my cousin who plays Warzone and FIFA is going to care about that stuff, but it doesn't mean it's not valuable. And the other thing again is that it's not like we can't do that first thing. It's not like I can't tell you if this game is worth $60 or if it's fun. I've played a lot of video games and I know when a game is fun or not. I have my own perspective of that, but I can also provide something a little bit, you know, more than that too. It's not like people think it's like this mutually exclusive thing where it's like, if I review it, you can't. If I talk about my identity, I can't talk about if the game's fun. If I, you know, it's not a zero sum game. We can do all of these things and we can coexist with other people in the space. And I think the fact that we're all four of us talking about this on a podcast is a kind of testament to that, right? Like we're not, well, Kyle's not here, but that's because he's moving. It's not because we kicked him out.
We don't value his voice.
Kyle's moving, the white guy. We can't have him on here.
Yeah, it's too much.
For the record, we did ask Kyle if he wanted to be on the show, but he said he couldn't find his microphone, and that's why he's not here. For the record.
And you know what, though? I think like if they really don't care beyond the sort of, is this fun? Is this worth $60? They shouldn't bother us about it. You know, if we say anything beyond that.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like a lot of when people say that they just want to hear like just like the straight like objective type, is this fun or not type review, like those are everywhere. They're all over YouTube. There are people at like big game outlets even that deliver pretty straightforward like checklist type reviews. Like, I think what frustrates me when I see that argument of like keep reviews objective, keep like the like contextual insight out of it, is that those like, why can't the two coexist? Like, why can't there be all sorts of reviews? Like, there could be like the Waypoint deep dive and then also the other thing. Like, I just don't understand why the two can't coexist, and that's always been weird to me.
No, yeah, I think that's a really good point. That's the whole thing, is the whole mutually exclusive thing, where it's like, again, like you were saying, the idea that you can't find reviews that talk about the gameplay if someone's writing about representation, which is, it's bullshit, because most outlets are going to want you to talk about those things side by side anyway, where it's like, if you felt a certain way about the representation, add a couple paragraphs in, but just make sure you're talking about the gameplay and the environments and the storytelling and stuff like that too, and just then you're good, you know, like that. Like, realistically, that's the worst you got to deal with, is like a couple paragraphs. And I don't know, man. I like reading about games. I usually find that reviews don't do that much for me. I've talked about this on the podcast before, where it's like, I'll read a game review and you read three of them that are around the same score, and it's like, okay, I know what the pluses and minuses of this game are. I'm pretty sure I know if I want to buy it. And then all the value that I get out of a review is like hearing what someone thought about it in their own like weird quirky ways, and the things that they think about and how they see different parts of this game that I might not necessarily have the same perspective on. And that's the stuff that I find valuable about game reviews when I look at that stuff like 2 months later. I don't know. But all that matters now is that we broke the Guinness World Record for most Asian American folks talking about Ghost of Tsushima at the same time.
Yes. We did it.
It's official. We're gonna we're gonna go to Guinness about this right after we finish recording.
Yeah, I'll just send them like a DM proof.
A screenshot.
Three Asians in one spot, SJW, am I right?
I know, man.
I've been doing this thing where it's like, if I reviewed the game, would I have brought in, you know, all of this sort of queasiness with like nationalism into it? And like, I definitely would have mentioned it, but I think reviews, game reviews in particular, are sort of beholden to this. But it looks good and it plays well and the systems are fun and the leveling is easy and the combat's cool. Or whatever. And I can't imagine like me being like, oh, you know, but also this nationalism stuff is kind of Wigan. I don't think that would have like made me go, all right, well, 6 out of 10, right? Because it looks great, plays great, feels great, but because of this personal stuff, I have to, you know, knock it down a bunch of points. Like, no, I probably would have given like an 8 out of 10, you know?
And it's not just that, but it's also the fact that you're heavily disincentivized to do that, because if you factor that stuff into your review and it affects your score, it'll be reflected in the Metacritic, which then people will get pissed at you, because they do that every single time this happens, which is that like if someone's review score is affected by their own personal opinions and not just like the gameplay quote overall, then you're gonna get DMs and death threats and stuff like that.
But like the thing is though, and this is what I think I've been failing to try and say on Twitter, is that you can't put a number score to that particular emotion the same way you can if you see a really ugly game. You know, if a game is just plays horribly, then that's like a number, like a number demerit that you can quantify. But like whether or not you feel uncomfortable because a samurai talks about like repelling foreign savages, and that just sort of like reverberates in the sort of lizard brain of your upbringing, like that's not a thing that I can put a number to in the same way that I can if like the voice acting's horrible or something like that, you know?
Like, this is why I miss sites like Killscreen, rest in peace, is that there was a space in reviews, because like they numbered it, but there was a space in reviews for a little bit of like, I'm just going to say cultural criticism, looking at it from like a critical lens outside of just mechanics or like visuals and like all the gamey bits. And I think it's just like a point to like what reviews have become as time has passed, how like you have some people who want a more critical analysis on a thing, but those are just pulled out into like think pieces now, which are easier to get freelancers to write as opposed to like trying to find someone to write both like a review and a critical essay who would like be a staff writer. I just wanted to add that in there.
A lot of this factors into the way that my view of video games has changed over time, because in high school and college, I was very much a video games are art type of person. And I think I operated under the assumption that every other gamer out there who really loved video games had the same perspective, that video games are art and we should treat them like they're art. And when the blogosphere was big, that type of criticism became, I don't want to say prevalent, but it had a surge where you talk about video games the same way that you would talk about other forms of art, which is to say that you don't necessarily treat it as strictly a machine or a system. You don't strictly talk about the mechanics. If you're talking about a film, yeah, you're going to talk about the cinematography. Yeah, you'll talk about the editing and the pacing and how well that stuff fits together. But you're also going to talk about its cultural impact and the context under which it was made and the people who made it and what their perspectives are and how well it represents these people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that I slowly started to see as part of, if we're going to treat games as art, we have to criticize them as art is treated as well. And I operated under the assumption that everyone would think the same way. But I think a lot of people, it's like sort of diverged where people want to still talk about games like they're machines, or as like Ian Bogos would say, like toasters, where it's just like a machine that you're playing with and is it fun or not? Which is like kind of, I don't want to say anti-art, but it's such a different approach. But that's the whole thing, is that like you have to talk about it. You have to be okay with talking about video games as art in order to approach it this way, which adding perspectives and talking about it from the angle that we're talking about it right now, it helps, and like helps to elevate video games the status as art. And then my next question is like, does it even fucking deserve that shit? Maybe we should just talk about them like they're machines. I mean, I couldn't do that personally, but damn, dude, sometimes it's like, is this even worth it? You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just maybe leave the whole trying to talk about this shit like it's art thing to someone, to people who's...
Put it in the trash. We don't need it. We don't need that where we're going.
I mean, it'd make our jobs easier.
Yeah. I feel bad about the fact that a lot of that type of discussion is relegated to that like one paragraph aside in the review, where it's like the machine works good, but some parts of it were a little weird and funky to me at a cultural level, just so you know, but we're still giving it a 95 out of 100 because I don't want to piss off the people who really care about the Metacritic score.
Not to be like, you know, the real treasure was the friends we made along the way kind of thing right now. But like, I don't know. I think isn't the fact that Ghost of Tsushima, a game that we've all agreed is a fun, you know, blockbustery, surface level-y kind of game, AAA game, the fact that it's able to drive these kind of conversations and force these sort of criticisms, isn't that a sign of like the power of video games and the power of friendship?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that I think the harder some things are to talk about, sometimes the more valuable the conversation is. And I'm glad that we were able to kind of suss out a lot of this stuff, because it is so tangled up. And I'm sure there's going to be people who have issues with the stuff that we've said here. But, you know, you have to wrestle with this shit. Like, nobody has the right thing, the authoritative thing to say on this stuff. And yo, like, we're all coming at it from different perspectives, but I think it's valuable that we have stuff to say about it, and there is stuff to be said about it. But yeah, if it's a fun game for $60.
Yeah, like, I want, because I didn't realize that this was Sucker Punch's first game of the current console generation, which is huge. Like, that's several years. Well, I lied, because Infamous Second Son was like a PS4 launch title, right? I think. But then there was nothing else since then other than like some DLC and stuff. But that's a long time because, you know, this console age is ending. But like, despite like be critical of the media you love, like it's okay to not like certain parts of a game, but then overall like still like it because that's how I feel about Tsushima. And I was going to get on my soapbox one more time, but now I can't remember what I was
going to say. I'm setting it up for you.
Oh, like, thank you. I just stood on it. I figured out what I'm going to say. Just because I have some like cultural weirdness going on about how I feel of the game doesn't mean that like I want the studio and all of its developers to fail. And I want every single white man who loved this game to just like eat it. You know, it's my opinion. And again, like none of us speak for other Asian Americans, which is why like I've liked having this conversation. And it's really freaking hard because it's how do you conceptualize, like how do you like verbalize something in your head that literally every single person has had a different experience with. It's tough.
It's absolutely nuts because like this country sort of flattens us anyways to a single group. And so the process of trying to follow your own thread on this is uncomfortable and messy and sort of counterintuitive to how we're brought up, which is super nuts.
Yeah. I think like the less uncomfortable you feel with talking about it, the better you can kind of do that. Because I mean, dude, again, Korea, the Philippines, Japan, in theory, like there's a lot of complicated stuff there too, but it's like we can all just talk about this shit because we're interfacing with something in a similar way, and that's that intersectional flattening effect where it's like we are actually all have like a lot of overlapping Venn diagram shit, even though like we're bringing a lot of different things to the table. And it's all valuable in a way that I'm glad that it's not super easy to dismiss this game as it might be if it were a game that was a little bit more egregious with the stuff that it does, just because like we have to engage with it more. And but I think we should do that even with stuff that is more difficult to talk about or that is more egregiously offensive. You know, did anybody play anything else this week that they want to get in a couple words on? I mean, we're an hour and 15 in, we got a little bit more time. Don't know if anyone has anything else to add.
I can hear you again, so I'm chime in.
You were gone this entire time,
bro. My internet was like, you guys are, I can hear one syllable each, so yeah, I'm glad I'm gonna listen back later and hear what you guys are talking about.
It was a real heart-to-heart moment you missed.
I probably did. I'm sorry, I was literally just like cussing at my router and everything. But anyway, I played Necro Barista, which is
Me too.
Oh, you did? Wow, we can both talk about this because this will go up Thursday, so I have a review up now, I guess, at the time of publication or recording or whatever. But yeah, it's a cinematic visual novel. It's been in development for, I want to say, like 4-something years. I feel like I've seen it around for quite a while. And yeah, it's really good. Like I'm always like apprehensive when there's like a game I've been like looking forward to for a while, you know, like I've seen it making the rounds. Maybe it's like a good gift game, you know, like you see a lot of gifts on it on Twitter and whatnot. And this game definitely has like a really distinct style. It's like this like anime style, but it's all cel shaded, and like how it's cinematic is very interesting to me. Like it kind of, it's a visual novel, but it's never just like two characters talking to each other on a screen, like side by side with like character illustrations. Like the camera, like every time a character says something, the camera's like going in a different place. Like there's like a different framing, there's a different composition, different shot, which I find like really engaging for a game that's literally just clicking through text. And it helps that the storytelling's really good too. I was pretty engaged with the story. It's like 4-some-odd hours. And there's these little like nice like text adventures in between, which I had some issues with how those get unlocked. It's like a bit of a convoluted... Yeah, okay, so you had the same problem. It's like a bit of a convoluted system, which is a bummer because I think if that system was better, this game would be like, I would love it so much. Like, I would be so head over heels for it, but it just like makes it things a little bit more difficult to get more out of the story than it should for being like such a straightforward linear game otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Matt, like, what are your thoughts on it? Like, since you also played it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So Necrobarista is a visual novel. It's a very cinematic visual novel, which is, you know, it's just text. It's just a story that you click through, but it's presented in a great way. And it's about a cafe that's a sort of way stop for people who die. So people die and then they go to this very Australian cafe. Like this, mm-hmm. this game, you know, is made in Australia just from
they say cuppa.
Exactly, right? But they stop by this cafe and they have to stay there for 24 hours before they progress to the next stage of the afterlife. And so the story really focuses on a newly arrived dead person as he interacts with the fun staff of this dead people cafe. I would have had a review to go up by the time this podcast goes up, but I didn't finish the game in time and finish my review in time, so I'm going to miss the deadline.
Oh my god.
I know. It came last minute. It wasn't something that we were going to do, and it kind of just sort of fell on my lap. But
oh, really?
Yeah.
I got a code a while ago, and then I played it over the weekend because I'm like a procrastinator, and I was like, oh shit, that embargo's coming up. I'm always like, I wish I had a game earlier so I could spend more time with it. But yeah. I feel like I never actually, unless it's like a big game, like when I reviewed Persona 5, I literally played that over like 2 months. But yeah, I also knew people that binge that game, and I don't, that sounds miserable. Mm. They did that to themselves.
Okay, so embarrassingly, I got a code a couple weeks also, but I just didn't bother playing it because, you know, okay. I had time and it wasn't for work and I wanted to enjoy it. And then I tweeted about it, and my reviews editor over at the site that I work at DM'd me. It's like, hey, do you want to review it? And I was like, I never should have tweeted about it. That was my mistake.
It's always a mistake, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm trying my best not to write anything about Ghost of Tsushima for the site. Because I'm just playing it for fun, and I don't want to have any critical thoughts on it, you know? Or, like, any thoughts I have to put on paper. Mm-hmm. So I'm just, you know, I'm trying not to, like, put that out in the world. I don't want to write about it. I'm just having fun dicking around with it. You know, sometimes I never get to enjoy games not for work, I realize. Like, I have Call of Duty, and that's it. That's really it. And damn. I think people that work in this industry, maybe they don't, or like that don't work in this industry, don't realize that literally every game I play is for work purposes. Like, I'm only playing games for work. Like, there's so many games I'll just wait on, but like, I don't know, like reading all the reviews for Ghost of Tsushima and like hearing people talk about it and how it was like an old Assassin's Creed type game, and I was like, you know what, I really want that right now. I just want a checklist game. I don't want to think much about it while I'm doing all the shit, and that's exactly what that game is. But yeah, anyway, yeah, I played Necrobarista. I also played a bit of Ooblets. Have any of you guys played Ooblets?
It's not my cup of tea. I'm not going to try it. The writing's too cute.
Yeah, no. That's something I want to discuss, is I agree that the writing is so cutesy. I think it was Jay Castello, who I saw write, I don't think it was a review, but like a early access type thing. And they wrote about how, like, it's too cute for its own good. Like, it has such a distinct art style. It has a lot of personality. Like, I really like I like gardening sims. Like, I think those games are, type of games are fun. I like Pokemon, and I think the molding of those two genres is really unique and clever to me, but it's just so cutesy, and it's, like, a bit grating. Like, I feel like I'm not gonna go back to it probably till 1.0 at this point, because it's just, I don't, like, why do they call wood blankets? Why do they just, like, have, like, a weird name for everything? Like, sometimes it could just be wood. It could just be recycling, not reconstituting or whatever. It's like everything has a weird name, and it's just like, I feel like I have to have a glossary one because sometimes I forget what something is, but also it's just so, it's too much, and it sucks because like I really like the gameplay of it. It's just like, there's something about the atmosphere that's just like too crushing. Like, I think in like a lot, like I played it pretty nonstop for like a week, and now I'm thinking about it, I'm like, I don't think I'm gonna go back to it, which is a shame because I think there's a lot there that's really cool and really exciting, and I want to see it grow. But there's also just like, it's just so twee. It's so twee.
I have one thing I wanted to add again about Ghosts of Tsushima.
It returns.
Sorry, but I just thought of this as we were ending that conversation. And I think it's also interesting to think about other Japanese games that are not Ghost of Tsushima that portray like Japanese like samurai and culture and shit in a different way. Like, I don't remember that many games that were this obsessed with talking about honor and stuff. Like, it feels very different from like a lot of the actual Japanese games I play, which I just think something food for thought. Maybe think about how that reflects on the differences in how a Western studio might portray like Japan than even like a Japanese studio might. You know what I'm saying? Just interesting to think about.
Emma, is your sole motivation in life honor?
Honor and okay. only honor. Mm-hmm. I have a strict code that I live by. Think about my uncle and my dad constantly. Mm-hmm.
Do you ever think it's about creature comforts in the bath?
Never. No.
Like I did. No, that's weird. I thought it was.
I think about only two things in the bath, weird. Which is either my dad or my uncle, and I'm thinking about it's just them in a cycle. And that's it.
Cyclical nature.
Yep.
One of the options for me was think about either your mom or your exhaustion. That was one of the two choices that I had.
Let's see. That seems like.
Dang.
What's the phrase for it when there's like, you know, there's like more meaning there than, or it's like an unintentional, there's like a phrase for it.
Freudian, like Freudian stuff.
Yeah, a bit Freudian, yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I had creature comforts once, which was like, my dumb brain was automatically like, oh, he misses like having a dog. I was just stupid. No, he just wanted to get laid. Honestly, I respect it.
Is that in his code? I don't think it is. I don't think they're allowed to do the deal.
I mean, he said he misses the company of a woman. That's like the big thing. He misses like a woman's Whoa. Touch. So
settle down, Jin.
So
you have your uncle and your dad to think about. Come on.
He's got to save his uncle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah.
Don't we all? Yeah.
Your uncle too?
Yeah.
Dang.
Everybody's uncle is in danger.
COVID.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, dude. Wear your damn mask, yeah, everyone. Right?
We got anything else to talk about, folks, or should we wrap?
I'm down to wrap.
I mean, the only new game I've played is Tsushima, unless you count, like, getting mad at competitive Overwatch after playing for like 4 years, 6 years.
You're still playing time. Overwatch?
Only competitive Overwatch, because I hit platinum once for 5 minutes and didn't get to stay there, so I'm like really mad about it.
Your honor's on the line.
And that was a year ago. My honor is on the line. Yeah, I still play Overwatch, sadly.
Did anybody play Bird Alone?
Oh, I played that. That's a cute little mobile game.
I only found out about today. I want to play it.
It's cute.
It's sweet. I like George Bachelor games. Like, I think
he made the Hot Date, yeah, right? With the pug.
Yeah, he made Hot Date. That he made really the good. One about the where you're in a car teetering on a cliff and you talk to a deer basically before you die or not die.
Oh, so,
it's basically this game's also it's basically like wholesome r/wholesome memes. The game. Oh. Where you have a bird that just like hits you up once or twice a day and is like, and just says really positive stuff to you, and you hang out for a couple minutes, and
it's positive reinforcement.
Damn,
in the game.
I have to download that. Oh, I need that. Hold on, just download it. Really
there
quick.
Was an interview with George Bachelor because I like wrote like a short little article just boosting it because I thought it was a cool game that I wanted to spotlight. But nice. Yeah, and there's like an interview I quoted in it. I forgot what side it was for, but like. George Bachelor said that he designed it like a wellness app rather than a game, which I found really interesting. And that definitely rings true for it. Like, I feel like it's just like a nice little positive reinforcement every morning and evening. Just like, okay, now I feel good. A little better.
But it's also not twee. It's not nice core, yeah. You know? It's like, it's positive in a way that's not cloying to me.
Yeah.
It's also really funny.
I mean, it seems, yeah.
It has like a sense that. Of humor.
It is funny. And I like the art of it a lot. Yeah. Like, I think the art style is something I really appreciate. Like,
it looks very crisp and clean. Yeah. Like I'm looking at, like, a magazine, like, full of really nice illustrations.
Yeah,
it's
lonely.
Just, like, it's just a nice game. It kind of reminds me a bit of Kind Words, which was, like, another, like, nice core type game that was, it just kind of like served as just being like very like pausey vibes. That one was a little bit more twee, definitely, but I feel like it kind of serves the same purpose though, where it's just kind of like nice to talk to something, even if it is like a bird that just is not an animate.
I'm looking at the game on the App Store, and I just really like that one of the screenshots is, you ever think about death, and the options are just not really or all the time. There's no in between. I love that.
Yeah, it's oh man, some of the stuff he says just like actually makes me laugh.
It's a talented bird.
Great bird. Funny bird.
Does the bird have a name?
You name it.
Oh,
mine's name is Samson.
Cool. Oh, that's a good name for a bird.
Samson with a P or a Sam? Samson.
I named mine Anchovy.
Okay, what'd you name yours? Oh my god. I love that.
Anchovy the bird.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's an Animal Crossing bird.
Yeah. Anchovy. You miss your Animal Crossing villagers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I gotta go back.
Folks.
I know.
I think we're ready to wrap, yeah?
Yeah.
Well,
let's do it.
Thank you. I'm sorry I was absent, listeners, for so long.
It's okay, Katie. We still accept you. And we're glad that you talked about stuff with us too. Sorry, Kyle, that you weren't able to make it for this fun episode. But I wanted to thank Emma and Matt again for being on the show, both of y'all returning guests of Bad End. Matt, let's start with you. Where can people find you? Or where do you want people to find you on the internet?
Hey, you can find me at Law of TD on Twitter or just Matt Kim, but I'm not the band, so.
Right. It's not Matt and Kim. First name.
Not Matt and Kim.
Yeah.
No, just one person. Yeah.
And then Emma, where can folks find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at Emma Kidwell, or if you want to play any games I've made, you can go to mkid.itch.io.
Sweet. Again, we are Bad End Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. You can find us on Twitter at Bad End Podcast. You can email us at badendpod@gmail.com. If you would like to join our Discord, shouts out to the Discord folks, by the way. You can donate to our Patreon at patreon.com/badend. As a reminder, we are part of Superculture Network, which also includes Bullet Points. We're under the same umbrella with them. And Savoir Faire, which is a Disco Elysium podcast, which is presented by the Superculture Review, which is like our larger podcast where we talk about a certain game every once in a while. And we might be getting that started up again on a new game soon, so keep an eye out for that. Rate us and review us on iTunes, and we will see you in a couple of weeks. Later.